Podcasting in a writing class? Considering the possibilities. Episode 3. Podcast assignments, response assignments. Welcome to Podcasting in a Writing Class, Considering the Possibilities, a multimodal project exploring podcasting as part of a writing class. You are listening to Episode 3, Podcast Assignments 1, Response Assignments. This is a 6-episode podcast series with an interconnected web text published in Kairos, a journal of rhetoric, technology, and pedagogy. A full transcript of each episode is available on the site. I am Dr. Jennifer L. Bowie, your host for this series and a senior usability research analyst for the Home Depot website. I am also a podcaster with a variety of podcasts, including Screen Space, a podcast about creating usable, accessible, effective, and efficient web, blog, and digital media design for the everyday and non-expert designer. In this episode, I will first present some guidelines I have developed for integrating podcasts and provide 3 response-based podcast assignments. Without further ado, let's begin Episode 3, Podcast Assignments 1, Response Assignments. Possible podcast assignments. Like any media, there are a large number of possible podcast projects for writing students. In these next 3 episodes, I present some project ideas that should work in a variety of writing classes. Many of these assignments I have taught, and I will provide information on incorporating them, along with tips and pointers on making these assignments work. In this episode, I will focus on response assignments. In episode 4, the next episode, I will discuss media and message podcast assignments. I end the assignment discussion in episode 5, where I cover genre assignments. First, I will share some guidelines I've developed concerning podcast assignments. The first one is length and time. Like any digital project, podcasts tend to take students more time than simply writing a paper. When I replace a paper project with a podcast, I keep in mind the extra time it will take my students to record and edit. My general rule of thumb is pages to minutes. If a paper project was 10 double-spaced pages originally, then I consider the podcast equivalent to be 10 minutes. Since most people tend to read faster than a person talks, this will mean the podcast will have less verbal or textual information in it. So if this is an issue, do adjust accordingly. For more casual assignments, which will take less editing time generally, you could extend the podcast time more since you don't expect them to edit as much. In my own recordings, I found a page of text comprising of 12-point typeface, usually Georgia for me, and single spacing text takes approximately 3 minutes of podcast time. This, of course, varies depending on content speed and additional things like music, but it gives you an idea of what to expect. The second guideline area is transcripts. For any formal assignment, I require students to submit transcripts of the podcast. My primary reason for this is accessibility. While audio podcasts will work well for audience members with issues seeing, they will not work well for audience members who have hearing problems. Much of the accessibility programs out there for digital texts are designed to work with typographic-based texts, like websites and blogs, and not audio-based texts, like podcasts. Thus, I require my students to submit transcripts with their podcasts. The transcripts can then be read by those with hearing problems, thus the podcast should be accessible for those with visual or auditory problems. In fact, an audio podcast with a digital typographic-based transcript may be more accessible than a website, and will be accessible for a wider range of listeners/readers. Requiring transcripts for accessibility brings awareness to the issue. The transcripts also give me a place to comment or follow along when grading, which can be helpful. Usually students write out transcripts before they start recording the more formal assignments anyway, so it is often little extra work for them to submit these along with the podcasts. For less formal assignments, like their reading responses, I do not require transcripts because the assignments are too small. Asking for transcripts would just take more time. However, I do ask they include transcripts if they have them, since some students still do write out these more casual assignments. And the third area is editing. The level of sound editing I require depends on the assignment. For shorter and less formal assignments, like reading responses, I require minimal editing. I mostly just want an understandable podcast where the major issues are edited out. For larger and more formal assignments, I expect a higher level of editing and sound quality in general. If the podcast is their final project, I expect it to be clean of any sound issues, easy to hear, and have well-balanced sound levels. I will mention my preferred sound editing levels for some assignments I discuss throughout the next few episodes. Those are my three guidelines. Now let's start discussing some assignments, response assignments. Reading Response Podcast. In many of my classes, students are assigned once or twice weekly reading responses. In my senior seminar and in some graduate classes, students have the option to complete these in written or podcast form, often with a requirement for a certain number in podcast form. In my senior seminar, I require three. For many, the podcasts take more time than simply writing their responses out, so I make the assignment short and casual. Their podcasts do not have to be highly sound edited, and they should be short, 2 to 5 minutes for my undergrads. I do not require scripts for these podcasts. As a teacher, I enjoy listening to these podcasts as I get a better idea, often from their voices and tone, how students are reacting to the readings. I also get to hear them wrangling with ideas in ways I just don't see in their written responses. Plus, students want to make sure they do the readings for their podcast reading responses, as they don't want to sound stupid. One primary goal for this assignment is technological literacy, particularly podcast literacy. While students can choose when in the semester they do their podcast reading responses, I recommend they do one, at least, in the first few weeks of class to try out podcasting on a low-risk assignment. If they do this, then they do not have to figure out how to podcast while doing an assignment that is worth more. I have had many students thank me for this recommendation, and I've even considered requiring it. I kind of hate requiring something like that, so I haven't yet. Other goals for this assignment include increasing the students' ability to critique, analyze, communicate orally, and analyze their audiences. A key purpose of the assignment is community building, and hearing their peers on their MP3 players does seem to develop community excitement in my classes. They'll often talk to each other before and after classes about what they were podcasting. It's pretty neat to see. I put a sample assignment description for both my regular reading response and my podcast reading responses in the web text. In my fall 2010 class, students found the podcast reading responses overall contributed to their electronic writing and publishing skills, giving the reading responses a 4.2 of 5. Students found that the podcast reading responses particularly increased their understanding and application of audience and technological literacy, which makes sense since these are often the first podcasts they do in my class and because they're creating them for their peers. 8 other areas received a 4 or higher by the students, including purpose, media use and differences, oral communication, and ethos. I put a table up on the web text for this episode with the 19 areas and the ratings students gave each. I've included some clips of student reading responses so you can hear what students have done.
Today on this podcast, I'm going to discuss Lannan and what the book has to say about oral presentations. Clearly, our class has been a great example for what to do and what not to do in oral presentations. Some of us like to just jump off the deep end. Some of us like to stay on the straight and narrow.
Hi, this is Robert Manfredi's third podcast for Senior Seminar Fall Semester 2008. The topic of the show today is the 5 canons of Egyptian rhetoric. Stay tuned afterwards for another track for Morning State. So here we go. First of all, what does the word canon mean? Canon means the body of rules, principles, or standards accepted as axiomatic and universally binding in a field of study. So, holding to the definition, we can conclude that a canon of anything is pretty damn important, or rather, the most important part of a thing.
Anyway, I am responding to Heinrich's chapter 23, because God love him, he is pretty funny. I wish he was in our class. Wouldn't that be awesome? Wow. So the chapter begins out with Ralph Waldo Emerson's little quote there, which kind of makes me feel like a Power Ranger of rhetoric. Yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
The second time reading through Buck's article, I saw some very important and pertinent points about the relationship between the speaker and the reader. For me, I always saw discourse as always as something constructive, always a synthesis of ideas, but Buck's notion that speaking and discourse is a purely selfish and self-centered exercise also seemed to ring true, giving some thought. And that gave to the realization that I never really thought about the notion of discourse before this point.
Gloria Steinem was obviously a female force to be reckoned with for her ability to call a spade, something the media a lot of times is unwilling to do. I believe her sexist assignments in her work as a, quote, girl reporter helped launch her career into female activism. She was obviously a woman of principles who believed in standing up for what she believed in, even at the cost of losing her magazine for refusing advertising that sought to muffle her voice. I appreciate Steinem's rhetorical strategy of changing perspectives. I think that's something that all rhetoric should seek to do.
Peer review. Peer review of writing is always a tricky topic. Many students do not value their peer reviews, thinking their peers do not know much about writing. However, peers often have valuable advice to impart, and the review can be helpful. In addition, writing research conducted by David Bartholomew and others has shown that reading aloud one's writing often helps a writer see or hear what needs to be fixed. For instance, John Hedgecock and Natalie Lefkowitz on page 258 point out that hearing their text allows students to see it in a new way, leads to better analysis, and aids in the construction of an internal representation of the text. This idea for podcast peer review combines both concepts. In the peer review, the reviewer will read the peer's work on the podcast, commenting on it as she or he reads it. This way, the writer will not only hear his or her reading out loud, but they'll also hear the enthusiasm or the confusion of the reviewer, hear where she or he stumbles, and hear what works and does not work. This should make the review more legitimate in the writer's mind and more helpful. In addition, this will give the writer a copy of the review, which is not available in a face-to-face review. Having the podcast to refer to is especially helpful for ESL students or those with memory or process learning issues. The podcast peer reviews have been quite helpful in my classes so far from a teacher perspective. However, like other types of peer review, it generally seems like the strongest students tend to give the best feedback and are more willing to value the peer review, especially when done by another strong student. I had students do peer reviews of each other's senior seminar projects, which could be in a variety of media, print, web, podcast, and more. This made the podcast peer reviews fascinating. One strong peer review of a podcast played the podcast during the review and then would pause or talk over the podcast, much like the director's commentary on a DVD. In fact, the student told me that was his idea. He was watching a DVD and got this idea for it. This immediate feedback to the podcast was very helpful to the podcaster. And I actually provide this peer review as an example at the end of the section if you want to hear what happened. One student reviewed a website and provided the instantaneous response on opening the page, including a rather confused tone, which gave the website designer an additional level of feedback. The students who reviewed written or print text read them aloud in the review, and their stumbling, confusion, and praise of the actual writing seemed helpful. Like, they would read a sentence and say, I have no idea, or wow, that was really well written, something like that. One downside to these reviews, however, is that they tended to be very time intensive. The students who did a great job spent far longer on their podcast peer reviews than on a written peer review. While some students seem to enjoy it and get more out of it, the extra time may be spent on additional print peer reviews or other things in the limited time of any writing class and semester. In my fall 2008 senior seminar survey, I asked how the podcast peer reviews contributed to their understanding and skills in 29 areas. Students rated the skills on a 1-3 scale, with 3 denoting significant contributions, 2 moderate contributions, and 1 little to no contribution. 26 areas received a 2 or higher average for the podcast peer critique. For their overall applied rhetorical skills, students rated the podcast peer reviews as a 2.3, and 10 other skills earned scores over this. Students rated the podcast peer critiques as contributing the most to their written communication and their technological skills. Other skills that received above a 2.3 include analysis, critique, tone, delivery, and invention. Since peer reviews are rather private, I've only included one example, which I received explicit permission from the reviewer and the original author to use. I included the assignment description for this example in the web text.
The transition here is really good, and I know you had some
and now on to our podcast.
Advice about
within
the
series, I will be covering the
correlation between
rhetoric,
dance and rhetoric, but
ethos,
I think it works here,
logos,
especially given that it's
going
to be a series, and I'm
brief,
assuming that you're going
to
tie these elements at the end.
As a guide, I will be referencing Sharon Crowley and Deborah Haughey's book, Ancient Rhetorics for
Excellent
Contemporary
citation.
Scenes,
no plagiarism here.
As well
good job.
As an enjoyable read. Today's focus is rhetoric. What is it? Where did it come from? And how do I use it today?
That's very
rhetoric
good to draw your audience in with all these questions.
During most of its modern life, often mislabeled as empty
really
words
helpful.
Or fancy language used to distort the truth or tell lies, rhetoric's status in the public eye is not generous. However, rhetoric allows
nice
people
ethos
to make
build
important
there.
Choices without resorting to less palatable means of persuasion.
Teacher feedback. One of the most helpful podcasts for students was not a student-produced podcast, but a private teacher-produced podcast, Teacher Feedback to Student Work. In several classes, I provided feedback in podcast, or really just audio, form, and the students loved them. They enjoyed hearing my reactions to work and valued this more than a written comment. In addition, they were much more likely to listen to all of my comments, especially since the grade was at the end. In fact, I had students suggest I put the grades first so they would not have to wait through the whole comment to find out the grade. Some students even reported that the feedback in podcast form made it easier for them to revise and improve their writing. For privacy reasons, I'm not including any examples here, but these are likely pretty easy for you to envision. Audio feedback for students is not a new concept. Teachers have been giving students audio feedback from the beginning of teaching. In fact, it was our first form of feedback. Technology, like tape recorders and Norton Connect, have enabled teachers to record feedback and students to listen to it multiple times at their convenience. For instance, Chris Anston discusses the use of tape recording student papers in 1997. Anston, on page 106, notes that when he's recording comments, he feels a social dimension in narrative, more personal quality to his comments. The recording also allowed him to loop back to earlier comments, explain greater details, refer to class, and show his own reading process. He discovered that students preferred the taped commentary, and as a result, evaluated his teaching more highly. Richard Beach and Tom Friedrich, on 226, state that oral feedback allows for a descriptive, reader-based feedback, where the readers can discuss how they're responding to the student text. Teachers can more easily express feelings, such as feelings of being underwhelmed, overwhelmed, moved, puzzled, and they can also discuss what they expect or predict will happen in the student's text. However, as Lowell Kim points out, students can be discouraged by the sounds of disappointment, lack of encouraging tones, and even feelings that the teacher sounded mean. They also found the comments could be long, unclear, and disorienting. And this concludes Episode 3, Podcast Assignments, Response Assignments. Thanks for listening. Do check out Episodes 4 and 5 to learn more about podcast assignments. In 4, I will discuss media and message assignments. And in 5, I will delve into 2 genre assignments. These were all, of course, part of the multimodal text, Podcasting in a Writing Class, Considering the Possibilities. This multimodal text was published in Kairos, a journal of rhetoric, technology, and pedagogy. Please check out their full web text on Kairos. Full reference information, transcript, and links are available in the web text and also in the lyrics field of the MP3. All student samples in this podcast are used with full permission. The music used in this podcast is 6 off Ghosts 1 by Nine Inch Nails, which is available under an attribution, non-commercial, share-alike Creative Commons license. This text is licensed under a Creative Commons attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 3.0 United States license. Rights to these student samples are reserved by their authors. Please give me, Jennifer L. Bowie, and Kairos credit. Don't make any money off of this and share any derivative works. Thanks for listening.